Now, I am delighted to welcome to the programme, or should I say back to the programme, a good friend of ours at Near FM, and now the Sinn Féin spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment, Louise O'Reilly. Louise, good afternoon and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Donny, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Louise, before we get into the meat of the subject, so to speak, could I say that with your background, which I am pretty familiar with, that enterprise, trade and employment is right up your street? Not saying that you did a brilliant job when you were the health spokesperson for Sinn Féin, but that this is really up your alley, this one.
It is. It's back to what I used to do in many respects, because obviously I was a trade union official for over a decade before I was elected. So this is really back to my roots. My father also was a trade union official until he retired. So it's in my blood.
Louise, we will come to the main topic of the discussion for the day, because I appreciate your time and I know you're a busy woman in the Dáil. You have published a bill for the Protection of Employees and Collective Redundancy Bill 2020. Now, I know the basis of this is on the Debenhams situation, but talk to me about the bill in general, Louise, please.
Okay, so the basis of this is, yes, on the Debenhams situation, but it's also, it's actually an issue that was raised following a number of fairly high-profile cases. So we had Cleary's, we had Talk, we had Licenza, we had the Paris Bakery, and then we had Debenhams. And every time it happens, when there's a collective redundancy situation and the company just disappears, or they transfer their assets to another company, or they use the law to their advantage, it's never to the advantage of workers. And, you know, if you look at a company like Debenhams, they have a collective agreement with their workers covering redundancy and other issues, and they just transferred their company, the Irish operation, they shut it down and they transferred what was left over to other companies. And so then they turn around to the workers and they say, well, look, if the company still existed, we would honour our obligations, but the company doesn't exist anymore. So what our legislation is trying to do is to make sure that the workers are among the first people. So if a company goes into liquidation, that the workers aren't at the back of the queue, but they're at the front of the queue. And
Louise, let's just be clear about this, and please correct me if I'm wrong in my statement, that when a company goes into liquidation like that, and you mentioned the back of the queue, that revenue are actually at the front of the queue. Am I right in relation to that?
That's right, yeah. Revenue, and then there's preferential creditors, of which revenue of the state is always one. The problem that we have is that companies use the law to, because the law facilitates it, there's loopholes. This was found by a report that was done a couple of years ago called the Duffy Cahill report. And Duffy and Cahill suggested that we would make some improvements to the law to make sure that it couldn't happen again. So that happened after Cleary's. Unfortunately, even though Sinn Féin did table the bill in the last Dáil, it didn't get to its conclusion. So that's why we're going to table a similar bill on strengthened, and then we're going to try and make sure that the companies can't use the law basically to do over their workers like that. You know, I mean, the law should work for both. We're not looking for companies to be punished or crucified or anything like that, but we are looking for a bit of fairness when a company goes bust. I mean, some of the workers in Debenhams have 34 years service. Like 34 years is a long time to get.
And tell
to
me, Louise, we'll say that just anecdotally now, we'll just take one of those employees that has 34 years service. Where do they stand right now?
Right now, all they have an entitlement to is the basic minimum under the law, which is 2 weeks per year of service, capped off at €20,000. So they just have the same entitlement, you know, the basic minimum entitlement. But what they had with their employer was a collective agreement that covered issues like redundancy. And now, I mean, anyone who's ever done an agreement with an employer knows there's always give and take. So the workers got the redundancy agreement, but there would have been a give from the workers as well. So the management are always looking for something. The workers are looking for something. And then they sit down and they figure out between them. And it's always a compromise. But what happened in this situation is the workers compromised in whatever way they did. They got the agreement on the redundancy, and then the company used the law, because they didn't do anything necessarily that was illegal. It might be immoral, but it wasn't illegal. And they used the law to set up to move the assets over to their company in England and to put them beyond the reach of the workers. So what our bill is trying to do, and hopefully we will be able to get it through all stages in the Dáil, is to make sure that there's proper consultation with workers in advance of any liquidation, and that nothing moves, so that the assets don't move, the money doesn't move, the stock doesn't move, nothing moves until there has been consultation with the workers.
But can I just bring you back to something? And I'm asking the question, Louise, out of total ignorance of the law in relation to this, but it would seem to me that if, for argument's sake, what you were saying is that they're moving their assets in order to put it beyond the reach of the workers getting what they're entitled to, they're also moving their assets and putting it beyond the reach of revenue.
Well, no, because revenue would be a preferential creditor in the way that the workers aren't.
Oh, okay, so,
and I mean, I'm not saying, I have to be careful now legally, I'm not saying that they did that with the intention of doing the workers out of their money, but they did it because they could do it, and the effect of it was that the workers got done out of their money. And, you know, I genuinely do believe that the law should work for workers, and I don't think that it does in many cases. I think that one of the reasons I was elected was to stand up for workers in the Dáil and to try and make a meaningful difference. And that's what this is trying to do, is trying to help workers. Look, there's no substitute for being active, being organised and being in your trade union. That's what I would say to every worker and anyone listening. Join a trade union, get active. But the law should work for workers as well. And we've seen too many cases where the law seems to work for the banks, or the law seems to work for, you know, to give people a preferential tax arrangement so they don't pay much tax. Like, I'd like to see the law actually start to work for workers, for the majority.
Well, I have all long time maintained myself, Louise, that the deeper your pockets, the better your access to law is in this country anyway. Louise, it would strike me, and I hate saying this because I don't want to be a prophet in doom, I always look at the glass being half full as opposed to half empty, but I would, looking at the overall picture and the way things are in the country at the moment, I would think that this bill should be treated with a certain degree of emergency and urgency, because we are day in, day out being told that there is a likelihood of so many places closing because of the coronavirus and not reopening, places that are closed, jobs going. So there are thousands of workers that need protection right now, not in 12 months' time, not in 18 months' time, right now.
Absolutely. And never a truer word was said. That's why we didn't waste any time. As soon as the Dáil was back up and running, we wrote to the Crown Corla, because that's what you have to do. And we said we wanted leave to introduce this bill. Now, the other thing I would say to you is this bill was a version of it that's very close to it, was already debated. And both, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael didn't oppose it. They let it go. So it's been through quite a number of stages. So we see no reason why it can't be fast-tracked. And that would be my preference, that we would have time, because you're dead right. This situation is going to keep arising, because there's a lot of businesses that won't reopen. And there's a lot of jobs that won't exist for another little while, you know, for another couple of years till we get a vaccine, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we're going to have situations where there's going to be collective redundancies. And what Sinn Féin says and what I say is, given that we know collective redundancies are going to happen, we should give the maximum protection to the workers that's possible, because at the end of the day, you know, they're the ones that have given the loyal service. And I think it's not unreasonable, and I don't think it's outrageous to say that workers should be treated fairly. I mean, if that's a radical suggestion, well, then I'd hope that we're all radicals. You know, like, a bit of fairness to be injected into the system for workers, for the law to work for them and to be on their side. I don't think that's an outrageous suggestion at all. I think that's actually quite a sensible thing to say.
Well, I would revert back to something we spoke about a couple of minutes ago, that we'll take it that somebody who was 20 years of age when they went to work with Debenhams, and they're 34 years there, that leaves them 54 years of age. And you're talking about a 54-year-old who you would imagine would be still probably finishing off or paying their mortgage, getting €20,000 of a payoff. It, sure, in all honesty, Louise, I know if you were if you were flush and had no bills, 20,000 is a lot of money, but if you have to leave after it, 20,000 won't carry you far into this climate.
It won't, and you know, I mean, you're talking about, and they are mostly women, but you're talking about women that have mortgages, that have kids in college, that have kids that are hoping to go to college, that have, you know, in some cases, husbands who've lost their jobs and gone on to the pandemic unemployment payment. I mean, these are not people who, they're not highfalutin people, but they're hard workers, and they've worked all their life, for the company, and they've given good service, Tony. That's the other thing. So it's not like, these aren't people who are constantly in trouble. I mean, I'm talking to the shop stewards, and they would tell you they'd hardly ever cross words with management. They're a well-run operation. You know, the shop stewards are very strong, and the management, and you know, like, they would have had a very good working relationship with the management. But the broader company decided that they were going to go, and they used the pandemic came along when it did, and you know, if they were already planning on moving, they certainly fell right into their lap, and they just moved. And now you have a situation like, it just breaks my heart to see someone who gave their heart and soul to a company. And like, if you're 34 years with a company, Tony, you've celebrated every milestone in your life. You know, they've had a party for you when you go off to get married. They've welcomed you back from maternity leave, or, you know, in the case of the men, if you're coming back after your partner's had a baby, they've been with you when you're bereaved. Like, it's nearly like a family, and you can see that with the men and women themselves. It's nearly like a family. It's just heartbreaking what's been done to them.
Indeed it is, and in some cases probably closer than some families. Louise, I read with dismay that there is also industrial unrest in your old stomping ground, should I say, out at Dublin Airport. That's not looking good either.
Well, I think one of the things that we've been saying is we need a task force that's going to look at aviation jobs, not just look at the aviation industry. The airport is a huge employer. It's a huge employer of people who live in my own constituency in Fingal, but also people who live right across Dublin into Meath and Kildare. And the airport jobs were always good jobs. You know, like, we know that the aviation industry is tricky at the moment. We know that, you know, there's very few flights happening. But we also can see all the while that they're cutting the wages of staff, and they're telling staff that there's going to have to be potentially voluntary redundancies, but all the while they're working on the new runway in Dublin Airport. So what staff are saying to me is, look, they know that these jobs are going to come back. You know, we know that those jobs are going to be needed, so we want those jobs to be kept in cold storage, as it were, for as long as is possible. And I actually think there is a convincing case to be made for the government to step in and support the aviation industry. You know, and keep those jobs alive, so that when aviation travel returns, that you don't see people being rehired on lesser terms and conditions, or, you know, what they call those yellow pack contracts. Like, we want to keep the if there's good jobs in Dublin Airport, we want to keep those good jobs. We want to make sure that people have the wherewithal, because at the end of the day, Tony, and I'm like, this is good sense. If people have money, you know, people who live on ordinary wages, if they have money in their back pocket, they're not investing it in property or, you know, hiving it off overseas. They're spending it in the local shop. They're spending it in the supermarket. They're buying diesel and petrol and fuel at the pumps locally. They're going to the local pubs when they're open. They're going to the local restaurants and takeaways. They're supporting local business with their money. Like, it would be absolutely devastating if the jobs in the airport are to be lost to any great extent. So, like, we've been saying to the government, we said it to Shane Ross, and we say it again to Eamon Ryan, you know, like, protect the jobs in the airport. They're going to be needed again. Protect them, protect the rates of pay, and make sure that when aviation comes back, that those decent jobs are protected for people, because that's just so important. Do you know, I mean, it's like, at the end of the day, we don't want to see yellow pack jobs in Dublin Airport. We want good jobs in Dublin Airport.
Yeah, and the other side of that one, of course, Louise, is that one always has to look at the bigger picture in relation to this. And if you start axing jobs, especially jobs that are on that kind of pay, well, the knock-on effect in relation to people not being able to pay their mortgage, people not being able to live properly, the social deprivation that could cause, especially with numbers that you're talking about there, would be catastrophic.
It would, absolutely. And that's why, I mean, we have pleaded with the government to step in and do all that they can to maintain the jobs. And look, they've already taken pay cuts. They're already talking about redundancies in the airport. You know, like, we know that aviation is going to be tricky for the next while. We know that, but also we know that aviation is going to come back at some point. You know, when it is safe for us to travel, when it is safe for us to get back onto airplanes. I know people are nervous at the moment, but the time will come when they're not. And what we want to see is when the airport's back up and running, that it's back up and running with good jobs, that it's back up and running with decent wages, decent terms and conditions, and it's not left to wither and then, you know, to rehire people on yellow pack contracts. Like, let's not forget, companies like AIG and Ryanair, that they're extremely profitable companies. They can afford to weather a storm. You know, they have reserves, they have money in the bank. They can afford to come through this. You know, it's the people, as I said, like I was saying just before, but the Debenhams workers, it's the ordinary workers in the airport. It's an awful lot of people. I know even my own neighbours. They met and married their spouse in Dublin Airport. And very often, you know, that maybe one of their kids would be working in the airport as well. It's very much a family thing, and it's like it's the backbone of North Dublin. Do you know what I mean? The jobs in the airport and the knock-on effects of that, they are literally the backbone of Dublin, and, you know, particularly North Dublin. And we just don't want to see those jobs go. I think the government, the consequences of them not doing anything would be huge. Absolutely huge.
Louise, a little bit of housekeeping before I let you go. And again, I'm extremely grateful to you for the time you give to us here at Near FM. I noticed that before they even unlocked the padlock to recommence building in the Children's Hospital, the first thing that was said was, and I know it's not your field at the moment, but just a quick comment on it. The first comment made was, well, that's grand, but it's going to cost more now to build the hospital than we thought because of the restrictions, as if it wasn't dear enough to start with.
But that's nonsense, because it's going to cost the exact same. I mean, I've heard them say that, and I've heard industry people say that, and of course they would. Like, a builder's never going to come and tell you he can do a job for half, you know. He's never going to come and tell you he can save money. You know yourself, they're in the business of making as much money as they can. But it's the same number of hours that's going to be required. It's the same number of builders on site that's going to be required. All they have is staggered start and finish times. So there's no additional man hours to be required. There might be a delay, and yeah, there'll be a cost to the delay, not much though, hopefully. But the same number of hours. Like, if it takes two people 3 hours to build a wall, it still takes two people 3 hours to build a wall, no matter what. It's not going to take any longer just because they start and finish at different times. So, you know, I don't buy it that it's automatically going to cost more. I think this is just a case of people maybe using the convenience of the pandemic to say, oh, and by the way, the cost has gone up, the bills have gone up. I don't accept that for a minute. I actually think that, you know, there's a case to be made for getting the building starting again, getting it up and running, but I can't see where they're going to be spending the extra money. The only possible way it could cost extra money, because it's not going to cost any more in terms of the number of hours that it's going to take, there's small concessions have to be made in terms of hand hygiene and stuff like that. That's not big money. That's not big money at all. The only possible way it could cost more would be if the materials rose in price, and there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that that's the case. So I don't know where they're getting that figure from. I think they're just doing that thing. Do you know what they always say, is like, never waste a good crisis, you know.
Yes, well, that is true. That is true. And Louise, before I let you go, I don't think I spoke, in fact, I know I haven't spoken to you since the COVID-19 crisis and pandemic hit. Your comments in general in relation to it and the green fly zones, if you'll pardon the expression, and the way it's being dealt with and handled in general by the government.
Well, look, I think that the HSE and NFET and the public health officials have handled this very well. I think they've been very clear. And I think that where the government have followed the advice of NFET and others, I think we have had clarity. And when people are clear, when they know exactly what they're supposed to do, I think people have been brilliant. I mean, I couldn't let the moment go, Donny, without taking my hat off to the frontline personnel And I don't just mean the men and women in the hospitals. I absolutely do mean them. Our healthcare workers were second to none. But also the people keeping the lorries going, keeping the shops open, keeping the streets clean, making sure that we could all safely cocoon. And the volunteers calling around to people's houses, you know, that making sure that people could stay indoors and make sure that they were fed, etc., etc. So, like, there were so many heroes. But now we see from the government, they're not taking fully on board the NFET advice. They're saying don't travel, but here's a list of green countries. Now, if someone says green, to me that means go. That means it's safe to go. But the government are saying it's safe to travel to these countries. You can travel back and you don't have to restrict your movements or quarantine, but don't go. But why in the name of God are they saying it's safe to go to the countries, but don't go? See, effectively what they're saying, Donny, is the plane can take off, but you can't be on it. And the net effect of that is, and I know this from talking to people in my own family, most people book their holidays early on in the year. Like, same as everyone else, they want something to look forward to, you know. And they've booked their holidays, they've paid for their holidays, and they can't get a refund because the plane has taken off. And these are people who can only afford one holiday a year. Most people only have one holiday a year. So they have one holiday a year. They've spent their holiday money now, and they can't get that refund. The planes are taken off, but people are not on them, and they can't get a refund. Now, they can't afford to go on holidays in Ireland. That's why Sinn Féin are proposing that the government, instead of putting the money into giving you a tax rebate if you spend in a restaurant, that they should actually give money directly to people to spend in the form of what we're calling a staycation voucher. So every adult will get €200, every child will get 100. It'll cost more or less the same as the tax rebate. The only difference is you can only get a tax rebate if you have the money to spend. An awful lot of people don't have the money to spend, Donny. This is going to be a long summer for them. And, you know, we're saying give them a few bob so that they can go and spend no more than the government is proposing spending on a tax rebate scheme. But give them a few bobs, take the kids out, go for an ice cream, go for fish and chips, bring them to a tourist attraction, bring them to, you know, like a museum for the afternoon, and have a few bob to go out to a restaurant, to get a few hot chocolates, to go for a meal. You know, I don't think that's an outrageous thing to suggest that people would do. But the government are talking about a tax rebate on money that you spend. But that means you have to have money in your back pocket. It's all very well to say if you spend £50 in the cafe, we'll give you £5 back, so it'll only cost you £45. But you have to have £50 in the first place to be able to go and spend it. People haven't got that money. So we're saying spend the same amount of money, but just do it in a different way so it benefits everyone rather than it just benefits people who can afford to be out and be spending at the moment. And I don't think that that's outrageous. I actually think that that's a very sensible thing. And even at this late stage, we're still hopeful that the government will listen to what we're saying and adopt the scheme, because I think it'll make a real difference to people this summer, you know.
Well, indeed, Louise, and you and I both know in the constituency that you serve and the area that we both work in, if you know what I mean, that €50 in your back pocket would be an absolute fortune to some people, to a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's very fair for the government to say, if you spend money, we'll give you some money back. Because if you don't have money, you can't avail of that. So that's going to benefit people who are well off. That's going to benefit people who can afford already to go out and spend money. But what we're saying is, why not give that money, same amount of money, but why not give it to everybody so that people on normal incomes, so that people who have ordinary normal jobs, that they'll actually get back some money. Now, I don't think that that's radical. I actually think that that's sensible. And we're still hopeful that the government will listen, although given the previous form, I suppose maybe we could be on a hiding to nothing with this, but we're still going to keep pushing it because I actually think it's not too late to maybe salvage some of the summer for ordinary workers and families, you know, to see that they can get some class of a break.
Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment. As always, Louise, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and can I once again thank you for taking the time to give to us here at Near FM. You're always very generous and always very givish with your time, and I want to wish you the very best of luck with that new Protection of Employees Collective Redundancy Bill 2020. Louise, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Donny. It's always a pleasure, and I'm always, always, always delighted to have time to talk to Near FM. A big hello to your listeners. Thank you.